So right now, across the country, small towns everywhere, there are teenagers engaged in a war. It's a war against boredom. And the ultimate way that war gets won is that they escape from that small town through graduation, a job, the military, going on to college. But along the way, towards winning that war, there are many battles that threaten to derail the path to freedom. One such battle occurred for me when I was a senior in high school at McMinn County High School. The football team, football was over, the basketball team was out of town, and all the guys who didn't have any girlfriends gathered together to face the dull fangs of this boredom. And I can't remember who it was, but one of the guys recommended that we go on a quest to discover underground Athens. You may have had this in your own town. There's a myth that there's this labyrinth of maze underneath the town, underneath the courthouse and the hotels that are there. Well, that was the case with Athens. There was supposed to have been a pathway that went from the courthouse to the jailhouse, and that had been expanded during Prohibition to include places underneath the Robert E. Lee Hotel, where there was a speakeasy and brothels. And so we happened to have a friend whose father ran WYXI, the local radio station. It was connected to the old Robert E. Lee Hotel, and the rumor was that there was steps that went down into the basement there that you could access underground Atlanta. And so, in an effort to combat boredom, we, eight of us, agreed to meet there one Friday evening. So we get there, and we get our flashlights, and we go down the steps, and we're picturing finding some hidden cachet of well-aged hooch somewhere in the corner down there. And we get down, and about 10 minutes later, we realize that there is no way out of just what is a basement other than this place that's been concreted up. And our expedition is over, and we are back up in the waiting room of WYXI with boredom humming her victory tune right there as we sit there. What do you want to do? We could go jump off the Hiawassee Trestle. It's too cold for that. We could go over the interstate and drop stuff on cars. That's just stupid. We could steal a pizza from Domino's. Our collective grins and silence was consent enough. So the plan was simple. Two people would call from two separate phones and make two separate orders that would be delivered to locations within one or two blocks from each other. And those of you who have delivered pizzas know why this would work, because one delivery person would take both deliveries. It would save gas, they would get double up on the tips. And while the delivery person was delivering one set of pizzas, there in the passenger seat of the car would be this abandoned other set of pizzas just waiting to be liberated. So I left my car there in the parking lot of the radio station, and we loaded into Greg Mason's Blazer and Tim Crockett's Suburban, and we load going down to the drop zone, or going down to the rally point, and we start to divvy up roles. Now the thing you don't know is which place the delivery person is going to go to first, so you have to have two thief teams. And so George and Mike agreed to go to the house. We had our getaway folks, and then it was open as to who was going to be at the apartment complex. Who's up for it? Now, at this point, I should tell you that just 8 months before this, I had narrowly escaped getting arrested for stealing street signs. And my liberation from that involves some good old Southern Baptist virtues, which was fear, weeping, confession, forgiveness, and a promising that I'll never, ever do it again. But there was another Baptist virtue that was occurring at this point, too. It's called backsliding. And I was in the throes of it because I knew I shouldn't do this, but I wanted to be the hero. I mean, I just had these images of showing up with the rest of the crew with these pizzas in my hand, just smelling great and handing them over. And though they wouldn't have put me on their shoulders, I imagine that they would have wanted to. And so my head was saying no, 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 but my gut was saying yes, and my gut did an end around from my head and went right straight to my mouth. And before I could stop, it said, "I'll do it." 2 minutes later, I'm hiding behind a boxwood at the apartment complex, and my brain is telling me, "You are such an idiot. You are an idiot." Well, it's perhaps because my brain was telling me I was an idiot that I missed the warning signs. Just a block up, I noticed a car pull up and turn off its lights, but there wasn't anyone who got out of the car. A couple minutes later, I see George and Mike running through the backyard across the street. That's strange. But before my cum laude mind could recognize what two and two add up to, the Domino's delivery car shows up. And out gets David Bohannon. David Bohannon had graduated a year before this, and I really liked David. He was a good guy. And this little flicker of guilt started to come up from my stomach, but it was quickly squashed by the adrenaline. He went into the apartment complex, and my thief clock started right then. Like Carl Lewis, I was out of that, from behind that bush. I was running up to the car. It was unlocked. I opened it up, and there, like the Holy Grail, was that red insulated packaging with the pizzas inside, and on top of it, like icing on a cake, were four RC Colas. I took them in my right hand. I took the pizza in my left hand. I shut the door, and I head off across the street. My one foot is on the grass. The other foot is still on Lynn Street when there was a great light that shoneth upon me. And a voice saith unto me, "Freeze! Police!" Now I ask, my friends, what would you do? I did the exact opposite of freezing. I flew. And to lighten my load, I tossed the pizzas to the left, the colas to the right, hoping that that would free me up to run fast enough that I could outrun the bullet that I was sure was going to be piercing my shoulder. I make it to the corner of the house, and honestly, after that, there's a few moments that I sort of blacked out. I don't remember what happens and it happened. And then when my memory comes back to me, I'm running up Blunt Street. And it's at this point that time really slows down, and it hits me how big of an idiot I am. Because I had a ticket out of town. I had a ticket out of this boredom, and I was about to trade it for some cardboard tasting pizza. So 2 weeks before this, I'd gotten a letter from the United States government congratulating me for my 3-year Army ROTC scholarship. This was going to pay 80% of my tuition. It was going to give me $1,000 for books and for board, and it was going to even pay me $100 a month stipend. It was great scholarship. It was my ticket out of town. I was able to get accepted to a college. There is no way I could have afforded otherwise. It was 3.5 hours away. And what best of all, I just knew that there would be no beast of boredom that was there at this school. And so I was going to be out, and I was about to trade it for getting arrested. Well, by this point, I'm just really happy I'm not in handcuffs. But my lungs are about to give out as I'm huffing and puffing up Blunt Street, and it tells me I need to stop. And so I see this magnolia tree right over to the left, and so I dive under this magnolia tree. After I take about 3 breaths, about this time I see the police cruiser coming by. And I think at this point, I remember thinking, I wonder if they'd give me some credit for doing now what they asked me to do then. Because I'm freezing. And an ironic twist, right behind the police car comes Tim Crockett's Suburban. And I know I can't get out and go and run to the car now because that would alert the police, then we'd all get arrested. And so I'm just sitting there yelling at them in my mind. And just like a person on a stranded island who sees the lifeboat go by without seeing him, they are disappearing and leaving me to be abandoned to the depths of the local jail. I'm there on this island, abandoned, with the police circling me like sharks. and I don't know what I'm going to do. Too far from my house. These guys are gone. The only plan I come up with is I just got to make my way back to where my car was in the parking lot. It's about a mile away. It's through. I have to go back through town. And then I finally make one good decision. May have been my first good decision I made that whole day. It was to change my look. And so I take my jacket off. I take my hat off. And I stuff it in my sweatshirt sort of around like this. And I hope that it makes me look like just a chubby kid rather than a guy who's taken his jacket off and hat and shoved it in his sweatshirt. So then I start. I proceed to make my way in the, through the backyards, past barking dogs, and then onto Tennessee Wesleyan College's campus, which I know after this evening is about the only place I'm going to be able to go. I turn left down Jackson Avenue, which is a main arterial. There's four lanes to it, and I know at this point I'm most vulnerable. And sure enough, about halfway down the sidewalk, I feel the lights coming on me. I can see them in front of me, and I just know that it's a police car. And so I keep walking as smoothly as I can. And as it comes up close to me, I turn left as if I'm going to go into the girls' dormitory. The police car slows down. It slows down. It's like I have an eye in the back of my head. I can see it slowing down, but it doesn't stop. It keeps going on down the street. And I turn around, because I couldn't have gotten in the dorm anyway. And I head back across Jackson Street, and I weave my way through the alleys. And then finally, I get to the corner of the radio station. And there, 100 yards away in the parking lot, sits my 1975 Chevy Impala, like the chariot of fire waiting to take me home. And all I have to do is make it this last 100 yards. All I have to do is make it over this minefield and get into that car, and I'm safe. And I was thinking then what you may have been thinking right now, that my buddies have probably been caught, and they've ratted me out, and the police have put a sting on that car, and they're just waiting to arrest me. And with every step, I was sure I was going to hit a landmine, and that was exactly what was going to happen. But it didn't. I made it to the car, I opened it up, I sat down in the car, I shut the door, and I said, "Oh my God!" At this point, there was only one thing left to do. I had to find my friends. Now, I knew, even though we had not set this rally point, where they would be. They would be where everybody went to try to fight boredom, which was the Kmart parking lot. So I drive over there, and sure enough, there they are, leaning up against Greg Mason's Chevy Blazer. I get out of my car, look, "Hey, Ken, what happened?" And then I lay my tale upon them, sure that they would be very impressed with my police evasion skills. But I only remember two comments after I finished my story. The first comment was someone had the nerve to ask, "Hey, but where are the pizzas?" The other comment came from John, who was just shaking his head. He said, "Man, I don't know what happened. The last time we used those addresses, they worked just perfectly." Now, there's an epilogue to the tale. A couple years later, during winter break, looking for a job, guess where I applied? Domino's. It's a good place to work. Really like my boss, Rochelle. She was really great. We're standing in, came to trust her a bit. We're standing in line. We're putting toppings on the pizza. And I just couldn't resist. I said, "So does anyone ever steal pizzas?" She says, "Yeah, it happens every once in a while. In fact, a couple years ago, we had some idiots who used the same address twice." "No way." "Yeah, we called the cops. We had them set someone up there, and they got away. But we haven't had anyone steal pizza since." And there must have been something in my response or my silence that Rochelle picked up on, because she stopped, she put the pepperonis down, and she turned right to me, and she goes, "You wouldn't happen to know anything about that, would you, Ken?" "Absolutely not." Thank you.